This is Audible.
The Music Lesson, A Spiritual Search for Growth Through Music by Victor L. Wooten.
Warning. Everything in this book may be all wrong. But if so, it's all right.
Truth? What is truth? And by the way, if I always tell you the truth, you might start to believe me. Prelude, the beginning. Boy, do I have a lot to learn. There is nothing new about this statement, but the story I'm about to tell you may have you saying the same thing by the end. You can resist, as I did, but if not, it will only take you a moment to find a whole new world awaiting you, one you never before knew existed. Plus, resistance wouldn't stop him. I'd been a musician for a long time. Well, let me change that right away. I'd played the bass guitar for a long time, about 20 years before I met him. Yet it wasn't until I met him that I learned the difference between playing the bass and actually being a musician. And better yet, the difference between being a musician and being musical. And I thought I knew a lot about music already. I even thought I knew a bit about life, but what happened over the next few days proved to me that I was just a babe in this world. I also thought I would never tell this story for fear of ridicule. At least, that's what I always told myself. But I actually knew it was because I wasn't sure if this story actually happened, and if I didn't fully believe it was real, how could I expect anyone else to? Who would believe me anyway? I mean, I never found out who this guy really was or where he came from. The more time goes by, the more I start to think that maybe, just maybe, he came from my imagination, from some unused portion of my mind, where he's now gone back to live. I can still hear him knocking around in there much of the time. It's as if he's constantly rearranging the furniture. I can hear his voice ringing in my mind saying, "Real? What is real? And tell me, what importance does reality have anyway? Did you learn from the experience? Now that is important." He was a strange man, unlike any other music teacher I'd ever had. There was really nothing ordinary about him. He stood about 6'3" with long, straight black hair that hung down past his shoulders. His facial features were distinct, yet in a way that made it hard to tell where he was from. He appeared to be part Native American and part something else. I've yet to meet another person with eyes like his. They were powerful. They were also as crystal clear as a Colorado mountain stream. When he would lecture me, standing nose to nose as he often liked to do, the transparency of his eyes allowed me to look as deeply into them as he did into mine. Also, on any given day, his eyes seemed to change color. One day, they would be bright blue. Another day, they would appear green. And yet another, they appeared brown. I never knew what caused it, but it was a great device for grabbing my attention. Not only could I tell from his eyes that he was a healthy man, but also that his body was incredibly strong. Like a fine tool used for whatever task he chose, his body never seemed to falter or tire. Though I often saw him run, jump, gallop, and climb, I never saw him break a sweat. How he managed to stay so trim and fit, even though he ate and drank whatever he wanted, was a mystery. To him, a meal was a meal, and it didn't matter what it was or from where it came. He also used his eyebrows as a tool. He could control his eyebrows better than most musicians could control their instruments. Well, maybe not, but he could get a point across without speaking a word, just by wiggling one or both of his dark eyebrows. His mannerisms were unpredictably quirky, and his clothes were always the type that drew attention. Yet, he never, ever seemed to worry about what other people thought about him. Just about every time I saw him, he had on a different outfit. His shoes, when he wore them, were either an unnamed brand of boots or a pair of old worn-out sandals. I almost hate to admit it, but I actually miss the little irritating qualities about my eccentric friend. He was the most, how should I say it, free person I've ever met. He wouldn't hesitate to strip off all his clothes, hop a fence, and jump in for a quick, refreshing skinny dip in a private, off-limits outdoor swimming pool. Although he was always polite enough to ask me if I wanted to join him, hopping a fence naked in the middle of November for an illegal swim was not my type of fun. He possessed many of the qualities I would like to have, and I envied him for being able to do these things with seemingly no concern, worry, or embarrassment. Having an opinion without being opinionated was a gift of his. How to do that remains a mystery to me. I know now that he just wanted me to think, to use my brain. Answering my questions with a question was an important part of his teaching method. That frustrated me many times, but it made me think for myself. I'm sure that's all he wanted. I'm not sure if he ever outright lied to me, but I know that he frequently stretched the truth. Whenever I questioned him about it, he would answer with, "Truth? What is truth? And tell me, what importance does truth have anyway? Did you learn from the experience? Now that is important. And by the way, if I always tell you the truth, you might start to believe me." That confused me, as I always thought I was supposed to believe my teachers. I guess I was wrong. I can still see the sly smile on his face every time he knew he was totally confusing me. Confusion seemed to be my natural state when I was with him, especially in the beginning. I recall him saying, "Music, like life, and like you, is one entity expressing itself through its differences." My puzzled look let him know that I didn't understand. "Music is one thing," he continued, "but it wouldn't exist without its parts. You couldn't play a chord without different notes. Change a note, change the chord. Life is no different, and neither are you. You are expressing yourself in life by choosing different notes all the time. Learn to be conscious of your note choices, and life will respond with the proper chord." Or, in other words, life will respond accordingly. I didn't know what to say. He just smiled. He loved to laugh. I remember telling him about an invention I once saw called the lick blocker. It was a flat piece of board that attached to your wrist while you played guitar. It was supposed to block the audience from being able to view your hand, thus keeping them from being able to steal your licks. He laughed for a full 10 minutes when I told him about that one. "I'm glad I ain't normal," he would often say. "Sharing is one of the most important tools needed for personal growth," he once told me, also stating that many people never come to understand that point. He said that many of us try to hoard our knowledge in order to stay ahead of everyone else. I understood that completely because I used to use the same method. Somehow, I think he knew that. It didn't take long for me to realize that I was learning more than just music. We rarely talked about it, but in the few days that we were together, he taught me more about life than anyone else ever has. "Music, life, life, music. What's the difference?" I could hear him saying. I remember criticizing him for leaving my car door unlocked. He asked me if I believed my mother whenever she would tell me that all things happen for a reason. I told him that I did. "Listen to her then," he responded. "Change your vibes. Stop creating reasons for your car to get broken into." I had to think about that one for a while. Vibrations seemed to be an important concept to him. I guess concept is not the best word to use. I could tell that vibrations were important to him because he talked about them as if they were alive. His approach to music was the same, and he came alive whenever he talked about it. He seemed to think that all things were made up of vibrations, especially music. All things are in motion, he once told me, and although a thing may appear to be stationary, it is always moving. This motion may change, but it will never cease. All music ever played is still playing. I never thought of it like that. Whenever he mentioned the word music, he said it with a specific clarity I didn't have. It was as if I could feel the truth of the word vibrate whenever he spoke it. He even told me that thoughts were vibrations. I had to think about that one for a long time, too. I had no way of disproving him, and believe me, I would have if I could have. But when I thought about the way a lie detector works, measuring subtle changes in vibrations from the mind and body, I figured that he might have a point. He always had a point. When I asked how he knew all that stuff, his immediate response surprised me. A better question is, how come you don't know it? All knowledge that ever existed or ever will exist is already out there in the air. All you need to do is tune into what you want to know. He loved to talk about the power of the mind. All things have a mind, he would often say. Even an acorn holds in its mind a picture of the whole tree. If this were not true, how could the tree ever show up? Do you think that your mind is any less powerful than an acorn's? Pictures or music held in the human mind are bound to come forth. They have to. That is the law. Learning to use the mind is the key to all possibilities. His bold statements kept my mind spinning. I guess he was secretly teaching me how to use my mind because he never asked me to write anything down. Years passed before I ever realized that I'd taken no notes on what he'd said or even one photograph of the man. There was nothing except my memory to document any of the experiences I'm about to relate. And speaking of my memory, well, I forgot what I was going to say. The only physical evidence that remains from his visit are 12 handwritten measures of music. He quickly wrote them out one night while we were playing together at my house. He said that they were a gift from music. At first, I thought he meant to say a gift of music. But he always said what he meant. The measures were supposed to contain all of the elements he'd been showing me. We played those few measures together as a duet, but he said that one day I would be able to play the whole piece by myself. I'm still waiting for that day. I've never shown it to anyone. Most people would just say that I wrote it, and maybe I did. I don't know what happened, but one day I just decided to write the whole story down for myself. It was while I was writing these notes that I was convinced by some unknown force to share this experience with you. He would have said that I convinced myself, but I'm sure it was his voice that kept interrupting my thoughts, asking, "Who are you writing this for?" I'm still unsure what the answer to that question is, but since you're listening to my words, maybe I'm writing them specifically for you. Like me, you may be wondering who this guy really was, where he came from, and where he is now. I don't know if I can accurately answer any of those questions. Sometimes I think that he came from another planet. Maybe he was a wandering, retired college professor or even a mystic from the Himalayas. He's probably roaming around somewhere searching for his next impressionable victim, someone else's mind to screw around with. Maybe all the above is true. I've learned not to rule out any possibilities. The one thing I know for sure is that what he taught me, no, showed me about music and life is as refreshing to me now as it was when I was hearing it all for the first time. So, in following his example, I will share my experience with you. Once it enters your mind, You are on your own. What you do with it is up to you. I won't promise you complete accuracy or complete honesty, and don't waste your time trying to figure out which part is truth and which is not. It's what you get out of it that's important. Truth is your decision anyway. And as he told me over and over again, I want you to think for yourself. Boy, do I have a lot to learn. The first measure, groove.
You should never lose the groove in order to find a note.
I'd been working in the Nashville music scene for many years, and not once had I seen him. I was a known player around town and had played in many bands, and no one had ever mentioned his name. Although I hoped to make a decent living playing music, keeping my head above water on a consistent level was always a struggle, and the present struggle was rapidly getting the best of me. Maybe that's what brought him out. I was out of work but determined not to take a job waiting tables like so many musicians in town were forced to do. My landlord had just called to remind me that the end of the month was only a few days away, and with no gigs lined up, I was in no rush to return his call. My girlfriend, well, no need to lie about that. I didn't have one. As much as I tried, I could never seem to break into the recording session scene. The few sessions I'd done never generated any return calls, and whenever I lost a gig with a club band, I rarely knew why. I was a good bass player, not the best, but good. So I couldn't understand why anyone wouldn't want me in his band. Without a steady gig and not knowing what to do, I decided to start practicing more. I didn't like practicing, and still don't. But I knew that I had to change something. It was either magically get better, alter my playing style, or move to another town and start all over. Realizing the gravity of my situation, I decided to practice. Did I mention that I hate practicing? I never know what to practice or why I'm practicing it. I also get sleepy in the middle of the process. So there I was at home, painstakingly working on scales and modes and not knowing why. I just knew that my previous teachers had told me to do so. All the books I'd ever read said the same thing, so that's what I was doing. I was at my lowest point emotionally because I wasn't getting anywhere with my playing and I wasn't satisfied with my current playing situation. My home life and my love life, well, my whole life in general, wasn't in the best of shape. The rain beating down on the metal siding of my duplex, coupled with the monotony of playing scales, was lulling me to sleep. It was during one of my sleeping sessions, I mean practice sessions, that I first met him, or more accurately, when he first showed up. And that is exactly what he did. He showed up uninvited, at least I thought he was uninvited. He had a different story. He said that I'd actually called him. I'm still confused by that statement, but somehow, for some reason, there he was in my house. I have no idea how long the stranger had been standing there looking down on me. The fact that he was completely dry when it was raining outside made me wonder if he'd been there a while. The strangest part of all is that I didn't want him to leave. From my position on the couch, he appeared quite tall and mysterious. He was wearing a blue NASA-style jumpsuit and a black motorcycle helmet. And even though his eyes were hidden, I could feel them penetrating deep into my mind as though he was looking for the proper place to begin. "How'd you get in here?" I was startled, half asleep, and wondering why I wasn't angry at his intrusion.
"You asked me to come."
"I did?"
"Yes."
"But how'd you get in here? Who let you in?"
"You did."
"Oh, really? Did I give you a key?"
"I don't need a key."
"Who are you?"
"I am your teacher."
"My teacher?"
"Yes."
"My teacher of what?"
"Nothing."
"Nothing? Well, then, what are you supposed to teach me?"
"What do you want to learn?"
"Lots of things. What can you teach me?"
"Nothing."
"What do you mean, nothing?"
Exactly that. Nothing.
This was typical of conversations to come, but at that time, I didn't know what to make of him, and I needed a straightforward answer. You have to do better than that. You showed up in my house unannounced. I think I deserve some kind of explanation. Tilting his head, he looked at me through the face shield of his helmet and replied,
I teach nothing because there's nothing to be taught. You already know everything you need to know. But you asked me to come, so here I am.
But you said that you're my teacher.
Yes, I did, but try to understand. Teacher is just a title. I cannot teach you because no one can teach another person anything.
What do you mean by that?
You can only teach yourself. Until we live in a day where I can physically implant knowledge into your head, I can teach you nothing. I can only show you things.
What can you show me?
Anything.
Show me everything, then.
That would take a while. It might be easier if we pick a subject.
Okay. How about music?
Perfect. Music. Shall we begin?
I didn't know if I was ready to begin anything with this character. I already told you he was wearing a blue jumpsuit and a black motorcycle helmet. Yes, he was still wearing the helmet. But did I mention that he was carrying a skateboard under his left arm and a burlap bag over his shoulder? I imagined him riding his skateboard down the street through the rain in his getup. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I also couldn't tell if he was really serious or not. For all I knew, he could have been there to rob me. But I didn't think so. There was a lot I didn't know, but I decided to play along anyway. There was an intriguing quality about him, and I wanted to know more. Wait a minute. If you're not a teacher, what are you? What should I call you?
Michael. Call me Michael.
He removed his helmet and offered me his hand. I remember his bright blue eyes as hypnotic. They had an immediate effect on me. Somehow, I sensed they could see beneath the surface, and I was fearful of what he might uncover. I struggled to stay in control. Not bothering to move from my reclined position on the couch, I allowed his hand to dangle in the air. Asserting what I thought was dominance, I responded in a cocky tone. Okay, Michael, what can you teach me about music?
Nothing. I already told you that.
He retracted his hand.
I tried teaching many times before, once as an Apache medicine man in New Jersey, and twice as a yogi in India. I even tried teaching while flying biplanes in Illinois. This time around, I am living the laws of music. Some may call me a teacher, but I don't teach. I show.
This guy was full of, well, something. I couldn't quite make him out. Is this a joke, I thought? Is he an actor? He said that he is living the laws of music. What does that mean? Music has rules, that I know, but laws? It's not like we're talking about the law of gravity or the speed of light or...
Science. Music is bigger than you think.
Science, I said to myself. That's exactly what I was going to say. How did he do that? Coincidence? Must have been.
Mu is an ancient word for mother, and sick is just an abbreviation for the word science. So put together, music means the mother of all sciences. So you see, music is important. I can show this science to you if you'd like. Is it something you would like to see?
Even though he was talking like a crazy man, he had my undivided attention. But I didn't want to give in too soon. I also figured that since it was my house, I should be the one asking the questions. I reclined even more and laced my fingers behind my head. Next, I put my legs in a crossed position and tried to act cool. He gave a slight smile as if he was ready to counter my every move. What instrument do you play? He turned and took a seat in the chair across from me. Laying his skateboard in his lap, he tucked his hair behind his right ear and took a breath before responding.
I play music not instruments.
What do you mean by that? I was losing my imagined control of the conversation.
I am a musician.
He placed his hand on his chest to emphasize his point before gesturing at me.
You are just a bass player. That means you play the bass guitar. A true musician, like me, plays music and uses particular instruments as tools to do so. I know that music is inside me and not inside the instrument. This understanding allows me to use any instrument, or no instrument at all, to play my music. I am a true musician, and one day, you too shall be.
He spoke with confidence, and I was trying to find a way to strip him of it. Are you saying that you can play any instrument?
Of course I can, and so can you. It is this knowing that separates us. A true writer can write using a typewriter, a pen, a pencil, or anything else that he chooses. You wouldn't call him a pencil writer, would you? Your understanding that the writing utensil is just a tool allows you to see past it and into the truth of what he is, a writer. The story is in the writer, is it not? Or is it in the pencil? Your problem is this. You've been trying to tell your story with a bass guitar instead of through it.
I liked what he was saying, and that bothered me. Trying to hold on to my resistance, I struggled to find the holes in his argument. The more I lay there thinking about what he'd said, the more interested I became in Michael and his ideas, and the less interested I became in finding the holes. He definitely had a unique way of looking at things. Yes, he had shown up uninvited, and I probably should have been upset about that. At first I was, but suddenly I wanted more. I wanted to hear him talk. If he could help me become a better bass player, I was ready to let him. Maybe.
Do you know what it means to be a bass guitarist?
The question was a strange one. I didn't know how to answer, so I didn't.
The bass guitar is the honorable instrument.
What do you mean?
It is understated and underappreciated, yet it plays the most important role. The bass is the link between harmony and rhythm. It is the foundation of a band. It is what all the other instruments stand upon, but it is rarely recognized as that.
I struggled between getting sucked in by his words and trying to keep my dominance over the situation. He was winning.
The foundation of any building has to be the strongest part. But you will never hear anyone walk into a building and say, "My, what a nice foundation." Unless the foundation is weak, it will go unnoticed. People will walk all over it and never acknowledge that it is there. The life of a true bass guitarist is the same.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I never thought of it that way before.
Why not?
I was disappointed in my outburst. I didn't want to show my enthusiasm just yet, so I regained my composure and answered more calmly. I don't know. I guess no one ever taught me music this way before.
Therein lies your first problem.
Problem? What do you mean by that?
You still think that you can be taught.
Not knowing what to say, I stared at the floor in silence for a long while. The stranger remained quiet as well, allowing me time to digest his words. I wasn't sure what he was talking about. I mean, we're all taught at some point in our lives, aren't we? I can remember taking music lessons as a kid, and I definitely had a teacher. I'd even taught music lessons myself when I first moved to town. Realizing again that I totally lost control of our dialogue, I found myself getting worked up. I was reclined on the couch with my bass in my lap, trying to figure out something to say. He was sitting there in front of me in what I would eventually think of as his chair. I could tell he was looking directly at me, but I dared not look back. For some reason, I didn't want him to know how uncomfortable I was. Remember, it had just been a few minutes since I was, practicing. My mind was in a daze, my thoughts were racing, and there was a stranger in my house. I reflected on grade school and all my teachers and all the summer music camps I'd attended when I used to play cello. How about all the music books or even the metaphysical books I'd read over the years? They were interesting, but none of them had prepared me for this. Neither my mom nor my dad played a musical instrument, but they were very musical, more musical than some musicians I know. They sang in church, and there was always a record playing on their stereo at home. They also helped spark my interest by taking me to concerts when I was young and supported my musical interests by offering to pay for lessons if I wanted them. I can't say they taught me how to play music, but they surely supported my decision to play. Hearing it around the house was such a major part of my childhood that it was like a second language to me.
Language, that's good.
What? I replied in disbelief.
Language, that's a good one.
Wait a minute. Can you read my...
Music?
He interrupted with a sly smile.
Of course I can. Can't you?
That's not what I was going to say. Knowing where I was headed, he steered the conversation by asking,
Is music a language?
I would say so.
Then why don't you treat it like one?
What do you mean?
What language do you speak the best?
English.
Are you better at English than you are at music?
Much. I didn't know where he was headed.
At what age did you really get good at English?
I would say by about age 4 or 5, I was fluent.
And at what age did you get really good at music?
I'm still working on it.
So it took you only 4 or 5 years to get really good at English, but even though you've been speaking music for almost 4 times as long, you're still not really good at it yet?
Well, I guess not. I finally realized his point. I hadn't looked at it from that perspective.
Why not?
I don't know why. Maybe I just haven't practiced enough. I was frustrated by the question.
How much did you practice English?
All the time. But then I thought about it. Well, I didn't really practice English. I just spoke it a lot.
Bingo! That is why you speak the language naturally.
So are you saying that I should stop practicing music?
I'm not saying that you should or shouldn't do anything. I'm just comparing the two languages and your processes of learning them. If music and English are both languages, then why not apply the process used to get good at one of them to the other?
Realizing I'd totally lost my ability to direct the conversation, I finally relaxed and gave in. How do I do that?
How do you do that?
I had to think for a minute, but I soon came up with an answer. Well, when I was young, I was surrounded by people who spoke English. I was probably hearing it even before I was born. So, since I've heard people speaking English every day of my life, it was easy for me to pick up because it was always around. How's that?
It's a start. Keep going.
Okay. Because I heard English every day, speaking it came naturally to me. I was talking more quickly and with more confidence. It wasn't something I ever thought about. It wasn't something I ever really practiced. I just did it. I just listened to it and spoke it. And the more I spoke it, the better I got.
That's brilliant. See, you do understand. I like the part about it coming naturally to you. I must be a good teacher.
Comedian, yes. Teacher, I'm not so sure.
How can we apply this approach to music?
I'm not so sure. I am around music most of the time. It's hard to go anywhere without hearing some type of music playing in the background. So that part of it is similar to English. But I know that there's still something missing. There has to be something else that keeps me from being just as good at music as I am at English. I thought for a moment. Oh, I know. I speak English every day. I'm always talking, but I'm not always playing. I don't play music every day. If I played my bass every day, I'd be just as good. Is that it?
Did you speak English every day when you were a baby?
Well, not exactly. Apparently, there was more.
Do you need to speak English every day to get better at it?
No, I don't.
Then what's missing?
I don't know. My frustration grew. Just tell me.
Jamming!
He stated with a slight nod of his head.
Jamming! That is the missing element. When you were a baby, you were allowed to jam with the English language. From day one, not only were you allowed to jam, you were encouraged to. And better yet, you didn't just jam, you jammed with professionals. Just about everyone you communicated with when you were a baby was already a master of the English language. And because of that, you are now a master.
A master?
A genuine master. The only reason you are not called a master is that everyone else is just as good at it as you are. Everyone is a master. Think about it. If you were as good at music as you are at English, you would surely be considered a master, would you not?
Oh, my God. You're right. Another unintended outburst. The words just leapt from my mouth, seemingly of their own free will. What he was saying made so much sense. I was surprised I never recognized it before.
Thanks for the compliment, but please keep listening. There are only two elements that allowed you to become a master of the English language at such a young age. Only two. Being surrounded by it and jamming with it. That's it. English came quickly and easily to you, and from what you told me, you were also surrounded by music. So it must be jamming that makes a difference. Imagine if we allowed beginners to jam with professionals on a daily basis. Do you think it would take them 20 years to get good? Absolutely not. It wouldn't even take them 10. They would be great by the time they were musically 4 or 5 years old. Instead, we keep the beginners in the beginning level class for a few years before we let them move up to the intermediate level class. After a few more years at that level, they may move up to the advanced level class, but they still have to work up through the ranks of that class before they are really considered advanced level players. Once they stay at that level for a few years, we turn them loose so that they can go pay their dues elsewhere. Think about it. After all these years of training, you still have to pay dues. When it comes to learning a language, what does paying dues mean? How many dues did you have to pay while learning English?
Michael had interesting things to say. Abandoning my need for dominance, I sat up on the couch. The only way I can explain it is that I wanted to get closer to what he was saying. I wanted him to keep talking, all day if he was willing, but he paused as if inviting me to say something. I see your point, but not all of us have access to professional musicians. I can't just call up Herbie Hancock or Mike Stern and say, "Hey, I'm coming over. Want to jam?" So what now? What am I supposed to do if I don't have professionals to play with every day?
You could have chosen to be born into a family of professional musicians.
He answered without a smile, making it hard for me to tell if he was serious or not. It's too late for that now.
I guess so. There's always next time. Still, there are professionals you can bring here to you.
Really now? How am I supposed to do that? I wasn't following his logic.
Who would you like to jam with?
Well, I've always wanted to play with Miles Davis. I answered with a smile. I was only half joking. Placing his skateboard on the floor, he rode over to my bookshelf and pulled out a Miles Davis CD as if he'd placed it there himself. I didn't think much about it then. He put the CD in the player, pressed play, and nodded his head toward me. What do you want me to do?
Play.
What am I supposed to play?
What is Miles asking you?
What do you mean, what is Miles asking me?
I thought you said music is a language. Are you telling me that you can't understand what Miles is asking you to play?
I don't know. I was slightly embarrassed by the question. He turned off the CD player and picked up my acoustic guitar, which was sitting in the corner being used as a coat rack. The guitar was an old, beat-up pawn shop special that hadn't been played or even tuned for I don't know how long. It didn't even have a brand name. I called it a Majapan guitar because it was made in Japan. Years earlier, I had a pickup installed inside, but I rarely plugged it in. That guitar was unplayable, or so I thought. He sat down, placed his foot on top of his skateboard, and without the slightest bit of hesitation, began to produce the most amazing sounds. The music that poured out from beneath Michael's fingers was astounding. It was, well, it was Miles Davis.
Play.
What key are you in? I picked up my bass. Ignoring my question, he looked me straight in the eyes and repeated himself in a stern voice.
Play.
I recognized the song right away. It was So What from the Kind of Blue album, but I had no clue as to what key he was playing in. I fumbled around for a while until I finally found it, and as soon as I did, Michael stopped playing.
Where are you from?
Virginia. Immediately, he started playing again as if he didn't care about my answer, but this time, he was in a different key.
Play.
What key? He stopped playing, this time asking for my shoe size. 9 1/2. I was more than a bit confused.
Play.
I knew better than to ask for the key, so once again, I fumbled around until I found it. And once again, as soon as I did, he stopped.
What kind of bass is that?
A violin-shaped univox. It's a copy of a...
Why is it that when I ask you a verbal question, your answer is immediate and direct, but when I ask you this, you don't seem to know how to answer? Don't you know this song?
Yes, I do, but...
Well, what's stopping you? Play!
But I need to find the key first. I tried to hide my frustration, but he sensed it and didn't seem to care.
Oh, I see. You can't play music until you first find the key. Very elementary.
He stood up and walked over to where I was sitting. I guess it was so he could talk down to me.
What do you need a key for? I didn't even need a key to get into your house. Do you think your listeners have time to wait for you to find the key?
Well, usually I know the key before I start playing.
Do you always know what you're going to say before you start talking?
No.
And does that stop you from talking?
Not usually.
Okay then, play.
He sat back down and again started playing in yet another key. For the first time, he seemed a little irritated, which didn't make things any easier for me. I took a deep breath and jumped right in, playing along with him as best as I could. I fumbled around trying to find the root note so I could figure out something good to play, but quickly got frustrated and put the bass down. That was horrible.
You could use some help, but we'll get there.
He was smiling now, as if pleased with me all of a sudden.
What were you thinking about when you were playing?
I was trying to find the right key.
And you need to find the right key before you can play music?
It helps.
Why?
I need to find the right key so that I can play the right notes.
I see. Notes are so important that all music stops until you find the right ones?
I didn't say that.
Yes, you did. You said it clearly with your bass.
Well, tell me then, when should I find the right notes?
You shouldn't.
I shouldn't?
No, not at first anyway. There's something more important you should find first.
And what is that?
The groove.
The groove? Wait a minute. So the first thing I should do is find the groove when I start playing? That was news to me.
No, you should find the groove before you start playing. It doesn't matter whether you know the song or not. If you need to, let a few measures go by while you figure out what the groove is saying. Once you find the groove, it doesn't matter what note comes out. It will feel right to the listener. People generally feel music before they listen to it anyway. If finding the key is so important to you, at least find it while you groove.
I wanted to say something, but I couldn't think of a way to prove him wrong. I just stared at him while I fidgeted with my bass.
Forget about your instrument. Forget about the key. Forget about technique. Hear and feel the groove. Then allow yourself to become part of music.
Still holding the guitar, he started playing again. He leaned forward and nodded. Realizing I was not going to win the staring contest, I closed my eyes and waited, trying to figure out what to do. I decided to give in and do what he had suggested. Listen. I listened to the groove. Then a strange thing happened. Listening to the groove allowed me to hear more of the music. All of a sudden, along with Michael's guitar part, I could hear the drums, then the piano. I could hear Miles's trumpet, too. I could even hear myself playing the bass, even though I wasn't holding it yet. As if he was listening to what I was hearing, he spoke more softly this time.
Play.
Without opening my eyes, I picked up my bass and started playing. I don't know if the first note I played was the right one or not, but it surely sounded good. Really good. I was shocked. I didn't want to lose the feeling, so I kept playing. I was lost in the music. The thought of a blue-eyed stranger in my house was no longer an issue. I was jamming with Miles Davis. I opened my eyes to see that Michael had stopped playing and had already put the guitar down. He was applauding me, yelling, "Bravo, bravo!
Bravo, bravo!"
I was proud of myself. How did I do that?
How did you do that?
Michael was forcing me to answer my own question once again. I don't quite know, but it sounded good to me. I just grooved, I guess. I didn't think about the notes at all. But everything I played seemed to work.
That's right. Everything worked because you grooved before you started playing.
Groove before I play. I resolved to commit this new concept to memory.
I have a saying, and I think you should remember it. It goes like this. Never lose the groove in order to find a note.
I like that, and I think I understand it. Are you saying that grooving is more important than playing the right notes?
Don't jump to conclusions prematurely. All the elements of music are equally important, or not.
The elements of music? What are you talking about? What is that?
The elements of music are the individual parts that make up music as a whole. Many musicians like yourself struggle because you are not familiar enough with all the elements. You rely mostly on one or two of them when you play. Doing that is a great recipe for frustration. A musician like me, who appropriately uses all the elements, will be one of the greats, even though he may not be aware of the fact that he is using them. Actually, it would be nearly impossible to become a great musician without using all of these elements.
What he was saying was interesting, even though I didn't totally understand the concept. Elements was not a term I usually associated with music. Can you please tell me more about these elements and how to use them? That was something I had to know more about. He flashed a sly smile, leaned forward, and whispered,
"Why do you think I am here?"
Measure 2. Notes.
If you stopped playing notes, music would still exist. Let's pretend that music is made up of 10 equal parts. If we were to take a few minutes to break music into parts, we could come up with hundreds of different ways of doing it. But for the sake of argument, let's just say that it contains only 10 different parts, 10 different elements that are all equal. Or not.
Michael, why do you keep saying "or not"?
Because the choice is always yours.
Okay then, Michael, let's do it. Or not. I countered with my own smile. His eyes widened, and he gave me a thumbs up before continuing the lesson.
Even though you didn't know the key, what you just played sounded good because you had most of the elements in balance. If you do that consistently, it won't matter if you make a mistake. It will fly right past the listener's ears because the music will still feel right.
He raised an eyebrow.
Do you understand?
Yes, I think so. But can you tell me what each of the elements is?
I would rather you tell me. I'll give you the first one just to get you started, but you must give me the rest. You're already very familiar with the first one because it gets most of your attention when you play. We'll call the first of the elements notes.
Yeah, now I realize that notes are the first thing I think about. What about the other elements?
What about them? If notes are just one of the 10 elements, what would the other 9 be?
How about melody or harmony?
Wouldn't those be included in the first category? Anything dealing with pitches we'll put into the notes category. That means harmony, melody, reharmonization, scales, modes, chords, key signatures, relative majors and minors, and other stuff like that. What else besides notes can you come up with?
How about articulation?
Good one. That's number 2. What else?
Technique?
Nice. Go on.
How about feel?
I like that one because it can be looked at in different ways. Most people think about feel as it relates to the groove, but that's just the obvious way to look at it. I can show you other ways of looking at feel. If you approach it from the angle of emotion, meaning how you feel when you play, or how the listener feels and how you can affect that, then it gets interesting.
That sounds cool. I'd love to learn more about that.
It's up to you what you learn. I will show it to you if you like.
Okay with me.
Good. Feel, number 4. What else?
I paused, trying to think of more elements to add to our list. Michael allowed me to take my time. Just before I reached the limit of my frustration, he spoke.
Can you hear me?
What?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Oh, I get it. Dynamics. That's the next element, right?
Works for me. 5 to go.
How about rhythm?
Rhythm is perfect. It is an elusive element. It also lets us know that the elements are related to each other.
How so?
Rhythm can be looked at as harmony slowed down.
What do you mean? He totally lost me with that comment.
A440 means that a note vibrates 440 times per second, right?
Yeah, I understand that.
If you keep cutting that number in half, 440, 220, 110, 55, etc., you will eventually get beats per minute. At that point, it's called rhythm, you see?
I do. Man, that's cool. I've never heard anyone talk about that before. And the best part is, I think I actually understand it.
Thinking is good enough for now. If we want to, we can combine rhythm with tempo. They're different elements, but for our sake, let's put them together. Cool with you?
Cool with me.
All right. That's number 6. What else?
I sat there for a full minute trying to come up with something else to add. I was still trying to digest what had already been said, and it was getting harder and harder to come up with more elements. I knew they were there, but thinking of them was difficult. It shouldn't be this hard, I thought. My struggle made me realize that when I play, my thinking is quite limited.
Can you hear me now?
Michael asked in a high, thin voice. Yes, I answered, trying to figure out what he was getting at.
How about now?
This time he used a low, bassy voice. I knew he wasn't trying to demonstrate pitch, because that would be in the first category called notes. Then it hit me.
Tone!
You're slow, but you do get there eventually. Tone, number 7. Very good. Next.
How about phrasing? I asked almost immediately.
Phrasing is a good one. Most people only think of phrasing as pertaining to notes, but any of the elements can be phrased. We will look at this again later.
He was right. I never thought of phrasing anything but notes. But how can you phrase tone or dynamics? The concept intrigued me. Michael interrupted my thoughts.
2 more to go.
I sat there struggling for another couple of minutes before he finally broke the silence.
The final frontier.
What?
Star Trek. William Shatner. The final frontier.
Oh, space. I finally got it.
Right. Space. Rest. Not playing. Very important. This is the underused but all-important element. Think about it. If there were no rest, all music that was ever played would still be playing.
The thought of there being no rest was disturbing. Right about then, I was really appreciating the existence of that element.
One more to go.
Once again, I sat in silence, thinking, until Michael helped me out.
What are you doing when I am talking?
What? Oh, listening. I get it. The final element.
Very good. Now we have 10 different but equal parts of music. Notes, articulation, technique, feel, dynamics, rhythm, tone, phrasing, space, and listening. We could have made our list 100 or 1,000 elements long, but for now, we will stick with these 10. Is that okay with you?
They work for me.
Good. Think about all 10 of these elements and tell me this. When most teachers talk about music theory, which element are they usually talking about?
I thought for a few seconds. Well, notes, I guess.
Good. What else?
I tried, but couldn't think of anything else. Notes, I repeated.
That's right. Notes, pitches, and that's it. All the fuss about learning music theory, and now we see that most teachers only teach you how to use 1/10 of the elements on our list. Their music theory only teaches you how to use notes, and it's only a theory. That's it. Nothing else. It doesn't teach you about dynamics, feel, tone, or anything else in the list. Only notes. It should be called note theory, not music theory, because it doesn't teach you music. You can't speak music with notes alone, but you can speak music without notes at all. I can program a computer to play notes, and it won't sound like music. You need these other elements to make it complete. Without them, notes are lifeless. Music theory is shallow, incomplete. It does not deserve all the attention it gets. But at the same time, notes are important.
Ooh, that was the first time I'd heard him speak with such force. He sounded like he really had a point to prove. I didn't quite know what to say. I didn't even know if what he said was true. Michael was silently looking at the ground, so I decided to speak up. I think I understand your view on notes, so will you help me understand more about all the other elements?
Yes, we will look at all the elements individually. We started already, but let's not leave the subject of notes just yet. Let's dive in deeper. You ready?
Ready.
Here we go.
I didn't know what I was getting myself into. For some reason, I agreed to let this man show me about music, and although he had some interesting ideas, I didn't know if he really knew anything about it at all. Had he studied somewhere, or was he making it up as he went along? I sat for a short while contemplating my dilemma when my thoughts were shattered by an outburst.
Notes are overrated!
Michael shouted, slamming his fist into his open palm. Overrated? I get the sense that you have more to say about the subject. A lot more, as it turned out.
Most musicians think that music is made up of notes. They forget that notes are just a part of music, and a small part at that. If you stopped playing them, music would still exist. Think about that. The reason many musicians get frustrated when they start to play, especially when they start to solo, is that they rely mostly on notes to express themselves. There are only 12 notes. Imagine trying to speak a whole language using only 12 words. You see, for musicians, bass players especially, groove should be most important. But groove is not found in notes. It is found in the other 9 elements. The other elements, put together, define the essence of groove. That is why, when musicians try to play by 12 notes alone, they quickly run out of things to say.
I knew what he was talking about, and I was definitely guilty of it. Most of my musical study had been dedicated to notes, which was why I usually had a hard time playing well. Everything I knew about groove, I learned on my own. No teacher or book ever really told me what it was. When I thought about it, I realized Michael was showing me that groove, for the most part, doesn't get equal attention. I've seen many books teaching notes, but I've yet to see a book on rest, articulation, or tone. I realized that most of the other elements we listed were rarely taught. Most musicians had to learn them on their own. This was starting to get interesting. I was getting a glimpse into the vastness of music, which made me wonder why most teachers choose to confine it to 12 notes. I hoped Michael could shed more light on the subject.
Many musicians are afraid of those 12 notes.